Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, 5 days a week, 2 hours a day. We generally don't bring you too much news, except when Suzanne Posel turns up, which she has today. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Hello, everyone. How are you?
I'm good. You've led me to believe that you're about to scare the bejesus out of me. Proceed.
Oh, my gosh. Well, okay. I put up a very important article about the constitutional sheriffs and everything that they're going through on my website, OccupyCorporatism.com. We need to support these people. If you're in America and you're listening, find out if your sheriff is upholding the Constitution and is a pro-Second Amendment, and support them because they need it. They are being attacked. They're having their salaries revoked or slashed. And I put up a list of all of the wonderful constitutional sheriffs and their websites and how to get a hold of them. So that's a really important article. But I put up an article today. It's entitled, How the DHS Plans to Deal with the Patriot Movement. And yesterday there was an email that I cannot confirm as fact, but I did state that in the article, that is going around alternative media that states that there was a meeting with the FBI and they are going to put constitutionalists and patriots, anti-government groups, pro-gun people, militias, everyone of the conspiracy theorists, all these people are elevated to a high importance status as far as monitoring and potential threat assessment. So I went back and looked at a document that's been highly quoted, and I quoted it too. It's a document from the DHS back in 2009, which is right-wing extremism, where they talk about, because of the recognition that the Oklahoma City bombing was an inside job, and because of the conspiracy theorists and the Patriot Movement that sprung out of that realization, they need to better monitor the movement, to infiltrate and to monitor. And one of the things that I found in that document, and I've read it before, but does this ever happen to you, Vinny, when you read something and then you come back to it a later date and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't even see that?
I don't really read documents, so no.
Have you ever read a book?
I have, but usually I read a book once, and that's it.
Well, I was going through this document again, and I've read it before, but I noticed that toward the middle and the end of the document, it explains how they want to infiltrate the Patriot Movement, the awakened people, you know, whatever you want to call it, the conspiracy theorists, the tinfoil hat wearers, whatever you want to call it, to create a controlled opposition and to use that opposition to bring people out into the spotlight. Normally, if someone next door to you was a prepper, you wouldn't know it. They don't go around with T-shirts saying, I'm a prepper. I mean, maybe they do now, but, you know, a couple of years ago, nobody talked about these things. They didn't discuss them out in public. Now you can join social networking groups. You can go and listen to a myriad of radio stations and podcasts. And in social media, there's hundreds and hundreds of groups alone on Facebook that you can join that have like-minded people. And this is a perfect way, and it outlines in the document, and in my article, I explain it, how the purpose of alternative media is to bring these people out into the open, to recognize who they are, get them to join groups and sign up, and so they have information on, because once you put in information into a database, they know who you are. If you pay for something, they know your credit card number, they know your most recent address, and all this other data mining. So in order to find out who these people are and what their threat level is, whether they belong to a militia or not, whether they're a registered gun owner or not, whether they're a U.S. veteran or not, this is the perfect way to bring these people out from underground into the surface. And not that these people were underground per se, but just that since it wasn't something that was readily talked about a couple of years ago, and now it's readily talked about all the time, this was a great way to create the situation where they could find out as many people as they have to deal with as possible. And like I said, assess their threat level, assess their knowledge level, and keep a database of who these people are. And as people crop up and join more and more, how big the movement is becoming.
Well, and also this information that you're releasing here might also be a good way to make all those people freak out, stop supporting Patriot Radio, and stop caring about what direction the country goes, and completely, become shut-ins again.
And I understand that. And I understand that, but part of my job is sometimes to say things that may not benefit me, but it's the truth, and I think that people should know. So it is a double-edged sword, what I wrote, but I realized last night that it's something very important that people should recognize.
My perspective on this is let them watch, for everything that we do. It's kind of like a propaganda war, really, because I'm sure that there's FBI agents and things like that listening to shows like this and writing down details or whatever and surveilling everything. They're being exposed to this information too. Who knows? Maybe they'll listen to one show too many and go, you know what? I'm working for the bad guys.
That's true.
Them surveilling us is also a double-edged sword.
Yes. Yes, it is. At any time, you can come across information, and nobody really knows except for the individual what shakes them awake or turns their light on. Absolutely. And we think of these, we think of the DHS and the FBI as this one conglomerate, but it's actually made up of thousands of individuals. And these individuals, at any moment, can decide that they don't want to participate.
There must have been a number of FBI whistleblowers throughout history, aren't there, coming out and saying, well, look, guys, this organization that I was working for, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, is a bunch of criminal scum who run criminal operations, including staging false flag terrorism attacks. I'm not going to be part of it.
Yes, there are. Yes. There are, most recently in the last couple of years, they've been some IRS agents that have come out and said, look, I know that they're lying. I know that they're stealing money. And I think one of them, a woman, was imprisoned for a couple of years because of that. So there are whistleblowers, yes, of course. But the other aspect of this that I outline in the article is how they plan to have all of this work in tandem together to produce a U.S. veteran who is a lone wolf and who will commit an attack like the Oklahoma City bombing. And just recently...
A lone wolf that'll commit something like the Oklahoma City bombing, which the FBI and ATF staged.
Yes, and Eric Holder, don't forget, he magically lost a bunch of explosives, and then the Murrow building went up.
He's like, well, where did the explosives go?
I don't know. If he worked in any other job, he would have been fired. But
excuse me, dude, boss. I think I misplaced about 2,000 pounds of high explosives somewhere. I went behind the garage and smoked some weed, man, and I just plumb forgot where the hell I put all those bombs, man.
Is that your teaching song impression?
I don't know, man. I think I was just kind of making it up as I go along, man.
That's a good one. The other aspect is that a gentleman... has been identified who is part of an off-branch of the Al-Qaeda in Syria, working with the Free Syrian Army, which is the proxy army that we created so we could fight the proxy war, this fake terrorist group that we're funding with the UK. And so he's joined on, and he has TBI, a traumatic brain injury. He suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder. He has major mood swings and depressive disorders. And he's the perfect poster boy for this. And I think it's ironic that this person comes out, and whether it's real or not, who knows? You know, I'm not there in Syria. I'm not there with him fighting the proxy war, so I don't know whether or not this really exists. I know I've seen a picture. I've seen a YouTube video. I've seen details about this person. But you and I both know that it doesn't mean that the person, is the actual person that they're portraying, is committing these acts. So all of this falls in tandem with what they were writing about in 2009, almost, you know, letter for letter. So all of the whole thing is created. The whole thing is created.
Well, I was just thinking before we came on the show today, Suzanne, about the JFK assassination and 9/11. People are keeping on talking about it, right? And they're still focusing on something that happened in the past. Where I was trying to think, you know, what's an actual conclusion that we can get from these conspiracies, which are definite conspiracies, there's definite perpetrators, there's definite cover-ups, there's definite evidence, that kind of thing. Why do you keep talking about that for decades and decades? You know, we're more than a decade on from 9/11 now. How many people have gone to jail over this? None. How many government agents have even so much as had an inquiry over their names over this? None. And same with JFK. None. Nothing. Here's the point. You will never, ever, ever get the perpetrators of those two conspiracies arrested. What the point really is to have a look at how they went about it in the first place, and to be suspicious of things as they come up, new false flags, new assassinations, new conspiracies, to expose them as they happen, before they happen, just after they happen, that kind of thing. That's the point. These things show you the methodology of the New World Order conspirators, okay? It does no good to keep talking about one particular conspiracy without actually making that leap towards the methodology which is implemented all over the place, all the time. If you don't recognize that fact, you're never going to be able to prevent another one of those things from happening if you keep talking about the last one that happened in exclusive, exquisite detail for decades.
That was a thought that I had.
I could be wrong.
That's true. I agree with you. That's why situations like this new veteran who's just popped up, who's part of Al-Qaeda, we need to pay attention. Now that the story is out there and I've written on it, pay attention. See what they make of this, if they're going to create a false flag out of him, or if they're just going to use him as a decoy, or somebody else pops up too. You know, they've got contingency plans at infinitum. The hard part is figuring out what they're going to do next. The easy part is paying attention in the news and seeing what the trends are, so you can sort of guesstimate as to what they might be doing next.
You know, that would be a great website, conspiracytrends.com, where it goes through the mainstream news and then predicts possible false flag outcomes based upon these news stories and things like that and what they're going to say. And I think actually it could be combined with a betting agency as well. You know, just have a few conspiracy theorists who've got a few extra bucks or one. Okay, $10 on George Bush will be assassinated in a plane crash or something like that in 2015.
You know what the sad part about that is? People would use that to discredit anyone who posted on that site as having false information, because people in the alternative media, they wait for it to happen and then they say, oh, look, it happened. Like you said, they don't wait for it before it happens to do anything proactive. They just go ahead and confirm it after it happened.
Yeah. Maybe instead of beforeitsnews.com, we should have beforeitsaconspiracy.com or beforeitscoveredup.com.
That's a good one.
Or before the false flag gets committed on American soil and kills a whole bunch of people.com.
Yes. I wrote that article. I hope that people read it and at least take out of it what they want, you know. And it's unfortunate that it has repercussions, but when you're listening to a radio show or you're reading an article or you're you're doing anything, you should have your own personal discernment. That, again, go back and do the research yourself. And don't just blindly follow people. Especially if they tell you to follow them.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if they tell you that they're your friend and that they're the guy who's going to stick up for you. You know, that's a sales pitch.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. You know, that just makes me think of so many people now. I'm going to save you. I've got the information. I've got the documents. I've gone up against these people and such. I'm gonna make everybody free. You know, keep listening to this show, spread the word about it, and then I don't know, the people who listen to this show, all the ones that I've talked to, they're really, really bright, and they actually kind of give a frack, you know, and they're not easily manipulated, which is good because I really don't like manipulating people. I did back in the day in my old job. Never again. Never again. It's not cool, man. I think people should be given all the information, then make their own conclusions. Even if they make wrong conclusions, they should be allowed to do that too. You know, it's called freedom. Even if somebody's wrong, it's their freedom. Okay. Well, Suzanne, we've come to almost the end of the segment. Have you got anything else you'd like to skip off with in the last 45 seconds?
Yes, I've got an article coming out at about 3:30 Pacific time. It's all about this new initiative that Obama is giving grant money to all these different cities in order to build more and more of these micro apartments, these 300 square foot or 222 square foot apartments, for everyone to just cram in and be comfy and cozy right next to each other.
Like cockroaches in a roach motel. Thank you, Suzanne. Yes. Thank you, Suzanne, for bringing us the good news, the bright news, the good word, the bad word, you know, all of that kind of stuff. It's been a pleasure and an honor and whatnot. Yep, same thing's happening in Auckland, incidentally. That's what a lot of people are calling up Talk Radio and complaining about. The Super City's the worst thing to happen to Auckland ever since. We're having all these high-rise slave blocks putting up everywhere. Hello, it's what I told you would frickin' happen. it's pretty obvious once you know what the agenda is, exactly what they're going to do. And the problem is, then it comes as no surprise. And then you wind up getting all self-righteous and going, ha-ha, I told you this would happen, and now we're all screwed together. Thank you very much because you didn't listen to me. We'll be right back.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota. Yep. I love Johnny Cash. You know, it's great. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Buffalo, Minnesota, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Panama, you know, all of which are places that have a council building specifically for Agenda 21. Isn't that interesting? Johnny Cash, man before his time. My very special guest today is Marty Leeds from Marty Leeds 33 at YouTube. So it's youtube.com/MartyLeeds33. Are you by chance a Freemason, Marty?
I am not a Freemason, no.
Okay, we got that out of the way. Of course, if you were, you probably wouldn't tell me.
Exactly. I wouldn't tell someone like you, whoever. That's fair. Yeah, I get that question all the time. But no, I am not a Freemason. So.
Okie dokie. Well, what's with the 33 then?
The 33, actually, when I got my website going, I was 33 years old, and so it was just kind of synchronistic. It just kind of worked out that way, so.
There is quite a lot of synchronicity going on out there, I think, especially when you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Agreed. I've experienced quite a lot of it in the last year and a half, for sure. It's pretty much changed my life working with those materials, so.
Well, there's a whole bunch of journalist questions like who, what, when, where, why, and how that we want to ask you. So, sure. Firstly, we'll ask you is the who, and that would be who are you?
Okay. Yeah, I am Marty Leeds, MartyLeeds33.com. I've got three books for sale, one that just came out yesterday. First one's Pi, The Great Work. And then I have two, Pi in the English Alphabet, Volume 1, and then Volume 2 was just released yesterday. I also have a, I have an active YouTube site. I'm a teacher at the School of the Holy Science.org. And then I just released a Gematria calculator for the phone. It's an Android phone app that you can check out for like $3 on Google Play. And we can get into that a little bit. That's kind of what my books are about. Kabbalah, numerology, that sort of thing. And then I'm also going to be speaking at 3-Year Mind Conference, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It's April 25th, 26th, 27th. You can go to freeyourmindconference.com and check that out. A lot of great speakers are going to be there. We got Randall Carlson, Larkin Rose is going to be there. Mark Passio is going to be there. So look forward to that. So check that out. You can get advanced tickets right now. So.
Yep, and we're advertising the Free Your Mind conference on the commercial breaks at AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and our very special host, Freighter X, is one of the people organizing that, and hopefully he'll get his book finished soon as well, so we can be able to figure out the secret war inside Freemasonry and all of this kind of stuff. It'd be fantastic. Mm-hmm. Now, what is it that you actually got you into all of this? Because you're to do with numbers and pi and these secret sort of, it seems like a cult mysticism tied into numerology and such like that. Is that about right?
Yeah, really what it is, at least in the opinion of this author, is it's a science. It's a straight up mystical science that's been basically kind of occulted or put underground throughout the years, whatever, for whatever reason, conspiratorial, you know, you could point to a lot of different things. But really that this this fundamental science is the science that's been shared by, you know, the major civilizations throughout the years, like the Greeks, and this is what the alchemists were talking about. This is what's going on in Freemasonry. You want to look at the Priory of Sion. All of these sorts of underground secret societies were basically veiling this deep science, a holy science, a mystical science. And it's really a science that's more profound than what we're doing right now. A lot of the science that's going on right now is a very mechanical, very like reductionist, corporeal science. They look at the world as kind of like this artifact.
What does the word corporeal mean?
Like materiality, like very Newtonian. We basically, modern science looks like, I mean, they look at the world as if it's constructed as like a radio. Like you could go in and take the pieces apart, you know. And really what this science is that's focused on numbers is the recognition that numbers are a cosmological language. It's the language of the universe. And this is what these ancient people knew, and that there's key canonical numbers that you can focus on that can actually point to various phenomena and processes to that we can understand through the number. And basically, that's what my books are about, and that I actually kind of take this philosophy into the English alphabet in and of itself. And we can actually break that down and find a mathematical structure behind the English alphabet that really points to the connectivity and interweaving of just a lot of different, quote-unquote, disparate events, processes that in nature, and you can pull them together through the number. And this is what I'm basically trying to do. So that's what I'm looking at in my books. And I want to say too, I just had an article go up on worldmysteries.com. I did about 3 or 4 articles on there right now too. And so I'm breaking down a lot of this material. So a lot of this stuff, you don't even have to buy the book. You can actually go online and check this stuff out for free. So, and then if you're interested, you can give me your money.
Yeah, and when did all this start for you, and also when was this numerical language first discovered way back in the day, I assume?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I mean, for me, it started probably within the last like 3 years, and then really kind of reached a fever pitch in the last year and a half, where I really focused on it, really, and then started writing the books. As far as like when this was discovered in history, we really have no idea. It's obviously survived from prehistory, and we don't really even know how far back conscious, intelligent human beings go. You know, basically the anatomical or physiological record of, I mean, human beings as they are right now are about 150,000 years old. And we don't really even know what the consciousness of beings before that were, and if they were numerical at all. I mean, if they knew number, if they knew mathematics, geometry, did they understand architecture, astronomy, that sort of thing. So as far as our relationship with numbers, it goes way back. And I don't really think you can point to any point in history to say this is exactly where it, you know, showed up, the origin. So
theoretically, could it have been eternal? Like it's always been there and always will be?
Yeah, that's what they are. That's what numbers are. They're basically, it is the language, you know, like Galileo even said that mathematics is the language which God wrote the universe in. And it's basically the idea that before human beings ever even showed up, number was working at work in creation. So it's not a creation. Number is not a creation from mankind. Conversely, numbers created mankind. And that's why we get numbers right from our hands. I mean, the word digit comes from the word finger. I think it's a Greek term, I want to say. But so really, we learn to count. We learn how to manipulate number. We learn how to work with nature through number. This is what science says. This is what the numerologists and mystics of old did. And we can see that that's right on our hands. We learned it from ourselves. And so this is what I focus on. And then I actually go and concentrate on the base 10 system, how that can correlate to all the other systems. So basically, a lot of questions I've got is, because I focus on a base 10 system, if an alien species came down and had 16 fingers instead of 10, well, what would that say about the mathematics of the universe? What's important that people need to know is that the base 10 system is extremely important, because from the base 10 system, you can look at any other system. You can convert a base 10 system into a base 7 system or a base 16 system. It doesn't matter. And this is what's being said in the the Sefer Yetzirah, when they talk about the 10 emanations of God. They said not 9, not 11. They said 10 emanations. And this is what's important, is because these mystics are trying to pass on this information about how important number is. It's a language.
Who were those people again? The Sefer Nefer? What?
Oh, the Sefer Yetzirah is an ancient, like, Jewish, basically Kabbalistic book. It's a very ancient, like, mystical document that I haven't even read in its entirety. But basically what they talk about is, you know about the Kabbalistic tree of life, the Jewish tree of life. You've probably heard about this.
In vague references, but I don't know the full story, no.
Yeah, you know, that's what's actually compelled me to write a lot of these books, because a lot of the stuff that has been, it's been deep, rich historical context with a lot of this material, and a lot of people don't know it. And so basically what I was trying to do was, with these books, write field guides, if you will, very short, concise, highly illustrated books about going into esoterica, mysticism, the occult, and having these as guidebooks, field guides. It with number as your backing. And so being able to look at all of these ancient myths, rituals, mythology, you know, religions, spiritualities, all of this stuff, and realize and look at the numbers from them. Because basically my whole shtick, if you will, is that our ancient mythologies and rituals and stuff like that are basically riddles, and they're mathematical riddles, and they're encoding mathematics. And this goes deep into even the names and the very words that we're using, that we're speaking right now, that there's mathematical information encoded in them, and that the math actually comes first. And this is how we can actually understand languages, spiritualities, books like the Zohar, the Holy Bible, the Quran. We have to understand them numerically first, because it's in my opinion that this is how they were written. So.
So they basically, it's kind of like a coding, if you've ever seen those old detective movies or something like that, like every third letter means something or whatever, and then it winds up saying, I'm completely screwed and I'm trapped under a bridge, help me, and it's like something that was written 7,000 years ago or whatever, and then they go to that bridge and sure enough, there was a dead guy under there.
That's actually exactly it. I mean, basically, when you look at a book like the Holy Bible, the problem with our approach to the Holy Bible right now is a lot of people speak on behalf of it, and they don't even know what they're really looking at. Basically, what the Holy Bible is a very ancient, mystical document, and you're supposed to read it in through a mystical way. So when the problem with main religions, most religions now, is not really fundamentalism, it's literalism. They look at a book like the Holy Bible and they read it literally, as if they're reading like a Dan Brown novel or something like that. You flip the page, you flip the next one, here's the story, this is what happened, end of story. quite the contrary. It's completely, you're supposed to read it in this Kabbalistic fashion, which means you're supposed to read the story and there's layer upon layer upon layer. And when you're reading the story, you're not reading just left to right, reading, you know, sentence after sentence. What you're looking at the symbol, you're looking at the letter, you're looking at the numbers attached to them. And this is Kabbalah. This is gematria. And this is how these books were written. So if you're not reading it in this context, you're not even reading the book. And so really, this is a big statement to make, because
hold on.
Sorry. Yeah.
It's a language within a language. And the thing about words is words have meanings. And if you've got numbers encoded into certain letters or certain words and things of that nature, then the word has more meanings than we give it credit for or analyze in the first place, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I don't think we even understand the power of some of the words that we use. And we could go into the cipher a little bit and give people a little bit of context of really how deep and rich this is. And you know, I don't know if you want to do that, and I don't know how much time we have to break or anything like that, but it takes about 10 minutes probably to discuss. So we could do that if you'd like.
Okay, we'll probably leave that to the first segment of the second hour. We've only got about 3 minutes now, and then the next segment's like exactly 10 minutes, so I think it'd be difficult to squeeze it in there. Because I also wanted to get into the point that I don't quite understand this numeric language or the references to pi and all of these other things, and I wanted to sort of get you to explain what all these things actually mean and the point where I can actually understand them before we go into it, because I've watched a couple of your videos before coming on the show today, and it was just like numbers equal numbers, and this means that, and that means this, and so on and so forth, and I didn't understand the context or exactly how they mean what they mean or why they mean what they mean or when they started that, or, you know, I've had another guy on the show explain this before, and I'm still not getting it. Essentially, like it's still kind of confusing. I imagine that happens a lot.
Yeah, I mean, really, the problem is a lot of people are not numerically literate, and I wasn't myself. I mean, this was a process for me and a thing that I had to undergo and learn, you know, from the ground up. So, this is one of the things that I want to address, is that most people are numerically illiterate, you know, basically because of the school system. I mean, the curriculum that we were taught. I mean, I've talked to people all around the world, New Zealand now, Ireland, Europe, all over the States, and 100% of the time, they've told me, God, I hate math. I want nothing to do with it. I cringe, you know, and you get that consistently. And then it's like one of those, you know, things that make you go, why is that? Why does everybody hate math? And then you look to our school system and you realize that it's because we were taught math in an absolutely horrible way. And, you know, I like to make the point that I'm a college dropout. I'm an autodidact. I learn everything on my own. When I was in college, I took an algebra course and I got a C in it. And yet here I am writing a book on pi. And then so it makes you wonder, why was I not into mathematics back then? It was because I wasn't intelligent or I wasn't interested? No, not at all. It's because the way that we're taught math is it's just confounded and ugly. And that's the problem. So,
well, that's a very profound thing that I was thinking just before this as well. The reason why I don't quite understand this as yet is because the right teacher hasn't taught it in the right way yet for me to fully understand it. And I've had this experience myself where people will try to explain things to me, and before explaining it to them, they've said, you probably just won't get it. And my argument is, look, man, if you're explaining something and people don't get it, it's not necessarily because you're not smart enough to get it. It's that they're not smart enough to fully understand it and explain it to somebody of any intelligence level.
Agreed. Yeah.
All right. Well, here we are with the break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Marty Leeds from MartyLeeds33.com. You can also look up Marty Leeds 33 on YouTube. Back in just a few minutes, folks.
Bonkers.
Everything is a daydream. Everything in my
underneath. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. I know I care about insects and violence. A heavy baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but I let sanity give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome
some
back.
People pay for thrills.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. My very special guest is Marty Leeds, MartyLeeds33.com. You can also search up for his YouTube channel, MartyLeeds33, right there at youtube.com/MartyLeeds33. Now, we were talking just before the break about how if you aren't capable of understanding something, it's not because you're stupid or anything. It's because the person who's trying to teach it to you is stupid and they don't know how to interpret it for you or teach it to you, that kind of thing. But to a large extent anyway, some people are just really, really dumb. I'd be pretty dumb if I denied that. but in a lot of cases, you know, people who are reasonably intelligent who just don't quite get it, it's the result of the fact that the person who's trying to teach it is not quite as smart as they are and doesn't know how to teach them. Well, anyway, yeah. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, honestly, I don't really think people are dumb. I think people have the capacity to be very intelligent human beings. I think the problem that we have is basically how we're taught. I mean, I think really the school system, the curriculum that I've gone through and that I know most of the people that I've spoken to have gone through keeps you kind of like infantile, you know, kind of like a child. It's just, and so therefore when you get out of your schooling, whatever it is, even college, it's like the state is there to take care of you, you know? And this is the problem. And so we look and we're like, look at those stupid people. I don't really think people are stupid though. I just think that, you know, they have the capacity. Everyone has the capacity to be extremely intelligent. The problem is how we're taught, you know, and I like to make the point. We're taught what to think and not how to think, you know? And that's what I'm trying to do with mathematics is basically teach people how to look at mathematics, especially coming from, I come from a unique perspective because I kind of come from the side door, you know, I had no formal education. I have, you know, nobody backing me or anything like that. So, you know, so for me, it's just very important to try to teach this stuff and lay it out because for me, being numerically literate is extremely important. It's completely changed my life. And it's helped me understand so many of these ancient mysteries and has allowed me to sort of crack some of them. And we can go into some of the ones that I've, you know, expressed in the books and in the videos, but whatnot. But yeah, in closing, I guess, I don't really think people are stupid. I just think people need to be taught the right way and the right way to think. And that's one of the biggest problems we have in our society now, I would say.
Yeah. In other words, people aren't dumb. They've just been dumbed down deliberately.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I noticed when I went to university, it was just like, what value does this information have? You know, that was what it was occurring to me. Every single class, you know, I did Japanese, communication studies, film and media, sociology, and a whole raft of other topics. Business, psychology, none of it actually meant anything to me. And I was like, what the hell is the point of all of this? You know, they're teaching me all bunch of stuff. And it's like, great, information. Is there any practical use to it? No, apart from some douchebag, an intellectual flambé type conversation that doesn't amount to anything that you only really have after the course of a few beers and maybe a few joints. That's about it. And this is what university really embodied for me, is it's not teaching people how to think critically. It's actually teaching them how to be critical of people who can still think despite going to university.
Yeah, that's well said. I mean, it's amazing to me how many people I know that graduated, you know, they went to 4 or 5 years of college, spent thousands of dollars to go there, and then they get out and they don't continue their education at all. They're not avid readers. You know what I mean? I'm like, you spent $100,000 to go to college and you got out and the one thing you didn't learn was that you should continue to read the rest of your life. Like that's insane to me. You know, I mean, the whole point of going to, the whole point of going to a higher level of education is to be scholarly the rest of your life. And that really means to use your brain the rest of your life. And it's really sad. I mean, I know many people that went to college and basically shut off after that. You know what I mean? Their consciousness kind of just went. Yeah. I mean,
you know, it's like, is this what higher learning is about? I'm not keen anymore, you know, and I've already lost so much money and wasted so much of my time and gotten myself into so much debt only to become unemployed because nobody employs anybody with a university education because employers know that university educated people can't freaking think or freaking work. Oh my God. It's so sad, man. I mean, it's not to disparage everybody or anything. I'm just talking about one general trend. And there's other people in there, you know. Like, what I love is that the universities, they say, what was it? If you take a university, you're more likely to earn $1 million more in your lifetime than other people or whatever. Well, what they've done is they've taken, you know, say 100 billionaires or whatever, and just said these 100 billionaires made $1 billion more money than the extra person. So let's just divide that up amongst all the rest of the university educated people who are currently unemployed on food stamps and just say that you make an extra $1 million over the course of your life. You know, that seems to work, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's amazing what you could do with stats. It's just like, you can manipulate them any way you want to, you know, make your point. So
yeah. Lies, damned lies and statistics.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was graduating high school and then going into college, the pressure to do that was so enormous. Because it's like, well, what are you going to do? You're going to be a loser? What are you going to be a loser the rest of your life? You're just going to go and work some regular job or whatever? And it's like, wow, that was like, psychologically, that was very tough to deal with, especially in that time, in my formative years when I'm trying to figure out what the hell it is I'm doing with my life, who I am, where am I going, where do I fit in, what am I interested in? The like having that sort of that pressure put on you is a very difficult thing at that time in your life. And you know, looking back now, it's just like, I mean, college did nothing for me. I mean, it really didn't. The only thing that college taught me was that I didn't want to go to college, you know, so.
Yeah, concentration camps taught people similar lessons.
An extreme analogy, but fitting.
Yeah. I mean, in a concentration camp, they're there to kill you. In a university camp, they're there to kill your mind. And I don't know, I had this conclusion that the most educated people out there become the dumbest. In a lot of ways, because they refuse to listen to things, they refuse to look at things. In my opinion, ignorance is not stupidity; willful ignorance is.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, basically, when you look at most people, what they do is they formulate a belief system. However, that is formulated. Is it religion? Is it college? Is it science? They form that belief system, and then they perpetuate that for their entire lives. And that's what they want to do. And if you try to deviate from that at all, or try to, you know, I mean, you've probably had this experience where you've spoken to somebody about chemtrails and they just turn off. They want nothing to do with it because it's like they establish a belief system and they go with that the rest of their life without ever questioning it. And this is basically what all of these organizations and institutions do. I mean, they're mind control. And we, you know, even government, when you look at the word government, ment, it comes from, I think it's Latin, mentis, and it means mental, it means mind, it means and mentality, mentation, mentor. So what is the government there to do in the word itself? It's there to govern your mind. That's what the word's telling you it's doing. So, you know,
And the word govern stems from control, I think. That's kind of like one of its translations in the Latin, I believe. So the word government literally means mind control.
Yeah, and I mean, and this really, and that whole idea stems to, it goes to college, it goes to your job. You know, you got to fall in line, you got to wear the uniform, you have to have uniform, one form, you have to do this, you have to think this way. And so college, educated, higher learning people are not really higher learned at all. They're not advanced in their education at all. What they're advanced in is a belief system that they're perpetuating. That's all they're advanced in, you know. And I can say this very, you know, modern science and the way that they do science is really shows this. I mean, it's basically they do not want to deviate at all from what they believe. They've got the story. They're correct. They just got to dot a few I's and cross a few T's, and that's it. And I think they're dead wrong, you know. And I don't know if you just heard that TED Talks actually just took down Rupert Sheldrake's and Graham Hancock's. They did a thing in Europe for a TED Talks, and they took it down because basically Rupert Sheldrake was questioning the tenets of science. And science is supposed to be open-minded enough to like lay it all on the table, look at everything, and we'll, you know, and keep an open mind and, you know, that sort of thing. And basically, you know, we're being controlled. We're being taught, you know, what to think. And this is an enormous problem. So my goal in the mathematics aspect of this is just to put a new perspective on it and say there's no way that, at least the things that, you know, I've kind of written about, is this cannot be, you have to consider it. You cannot just not, you can't just blow it off. Because if you are, then you're not being scientific. So, you know, it's just my position. So,
well, I think whatever realizations that people come up with, if it's philosophical, statistical, political, the more you ignore information coming in, even if the information's wrong, if you don't even listen to it, how are you actually going to know whether or not it's wrong? More to the point, if it's coming in and it's correct and you instantly dismiss it, then you have become the one who was wrong, who doesn't know what they're talking about. And I believe that this is the real problem society has in and above and over everything else, is that we're not prepared to entertain the possibility that we don't know what we're talking about. We're not prepared to entertain the possibility that the person in front of us saying all this crazy stuff is actually the sane one and we're the crazy person. We'll be right back after the break. At thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, Marty Leeds is my very special guest for the next hour as well. And you can check him out at martyleeds33.com. And archives to this show and others are at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Back in just a few minutes, folks.